turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see?
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 120, and this is going to be a message that I delivered to the church in which I pastor, Mount Tabor Baptist Church, this last Sunday, from 1 Samuel chapter 24, dealing with one of the times in which David honored Saul by sparing his life when he could have taken it. And it demonstrates for us some very powerful principles about honoring those who are in authority over us, and making sure that we do not take things into our own hands, but trust in the Lord for vengeance and those kinds of things. So should be a good message for you. I know it convicted me. Often I am very critical and speak very unfavorably towards those who are in high positions, and sometimes to the error. And so this was a good message for me to preach because it convicted me, and so hopefully it should be a good message for you to listen to as well. So stay tuned for that. Before we do that, though, I want to take care of a little bit of business. First of all, make sure that you're a registered user of the website. This helps you to be updated anytime that there's a change to the website through email. You can do that on the show notes as well as on the center right column of the website. You'll also find on the center right column of the website our various affiliates in which we are associated. And two of those are focused each podcast. Today's is Amazon. Of course, everybody knows of Amazon.com. You've probably purchased many items from them before. And there's nothing special in terms of our affiliation with them. But if you do plan on purchasing something through Amazon, I encourage you to go through the Legacy Podcast website. That helps you to support the show by giving us a little bit of the commission on your sale without increasing the cost of your sale. So I appreciate you doing that. Second up is 48 Days. 48 Days is the work of Dan Miller's organization, and he is focused on trying to help people unite their passion and their wisdom so that they might be able to get into the position in the workplace or be able to create the work that is the best for them and the best fit where God has designed them to be. And so he has all kinds of resources for that. There's 48 Days to the Work You Love, which is based on helping you trying to get the right kind of employment position. And then there's 48 Days to Creative Income, which helps you walk through the steps necessary to start your own business. And then there's No More Mondays, which is a great book dealing with kind of combining those two ideas. And his most recent book, which is Wisdom Meets Passion, talks all about how to find where God has designed you to be and then to maximize that. So great resources for you in terms of your career and being able to make money. And of course, part of being a legacy builder is being able to be financially wise and be able to provide for your household, those kinds of things. So check out 48 Days and Dan Miller's organization there. Next up, make sure that you're following us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, all the various social medias. I'll be coming out with a new video here soon showing you some of the swales the mini swales that I've done here on the property, and also the shooting of my Mosin Nagant that I got for my birthday. Just some little videos there, so make sure you're plugged in to be able to access those. I'll have them on the website also, but you can check those out through the YouTube channel. And then also make sure that you are telling your friends and family about us on all those various social medias. Well, that way we can continue to increase the listener base. And I appreciate you doing that. Also, if you'd like to give a review on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio, we're on Alan Stitcher Radio. And the appropriate way of doing that, of course, is outlined on each of those channels. And so that would help me to be able to have more notice on various pages, and that way the website continue to grow and be expanded out, and I appreciate you doing that. And then lastly, if you like the show and you want to support the show, the best way of doing that is becoming a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year, and with that you have exclusive access to the members-only page that has downloadable material, charts and graphs for gardening, some additional items there. It also has some discounts to some various vendors, including a gardening vendor. There's also a vendor on there that you can access that would be able to give you discounts to pea shellers and nutcrackers and things like that that might be of handy to you on your homestead. And so check out all those things that are available on there. And then, of course, you're able to support the show also by doing that for just $30 a year. And so I encourage you to do that. Well, that takes care of the introductory material now. So let's go ahead and listen to the message that I delivered to the church in which I pastor, Mount Tabor Baptist Church, from 1 Samuel chapter 24. I want to begin by just asking a couple of questions. First of all, have you ever had somebody in your life that has hurt you deeply? I think probably, if we're honest with ourselves, we can probably answer that in the affirmative. Or maybe you have been wronged in some way recently. Maybe you have lost your job. Someone has misunderstood who you are or something. Maybe they have released you from your position of work. And maybe you've been wronged in the courts, maybe you've been wronged in a family matter or whatever it might be. And you're asking yourself now, what should I do? And I wonder if sometimes when we ask that question, we think to ourselves, well, I'll get back at them. You ever thought that? I know sometimes that happens in our family, our kids. Maybe one of them will hurt the other one, and then the other one that got hurt originally will hurt the other one back. And then, of course, they're both crying. They come to us, well, he hit me first. He hit me. And, you don't have to hit back. Well, I was just defending myself. You see, we have this concept. It's only human nature for us to want to be able to get back at somebody who hurts us. Isn't that true? Or maybe we could ask this question. And these questions, by the way, all relate to the message this morning, you might imagine. We could ask this question. Have you ever been around some people and the conversation turned towards politics? And as the conversation turns towards politics, everybody started bad-mouthing the president. Have you ever been in a situation like that? What did you do at that time? Join in? Start bad-mouthing the president? Now, I have to say that as I was working on this message this week, the Lord has really convicted me. This is one of the worst messages for me. I really don't like it, to be real honest. My flesh doesn't, and yet it's important for us to preach the word as it is, regardless of how we might receive it. And so, what we're going to do today is we're going to look at David and his response or reaction to Saul, and what we can learn by his example. And in order to do that, we first have to kind of catch up to speed on where we are. Of course, we left off in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel. And, of course, that is the great chapter of David and Goliath. And in chapter 16, of course, David had been anointed secretly by Samuel to be the next king. And yet he had not yet taken on that rule. And then in chapter 17, he kills Goliath and gets to marry Saul's daughter. We see that in chapter 18. And then in chapter 19, Saul begins to persecute David. Saul becomes jealous of David's fame. And he really gains this spirit of anger and abuse and starts persecuting David. And then Jonathan in chapter 20 ends up siding with David and showing his love for David and his loyalty to David in chapter 20. And then in chapter 21 through 23, we have all these different escapades that David goes on in his effort to flee from Saul. And he hides from Saul in various places and goes on various expeditions against the Philistines and hides among the Philistines and goes this way and that way, trying to both not hurt the Israelites while he's with the Philistines and still at the same time flee from Saul, who's trying to kill him. And then we get to chapter 24. And this period of time is probably when David is in his 30s. We see probably he was early 20s or maybe not even quite 20 when he took on Goliath. And then when he becomes a ruler in chapter 26.
He is age 30. So this is sometime in his early 20s, late 20s, right before he turns 30. And what we find in chapter 24 is that in verses 1 and 2, Saul hears word that David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. And so he gets together 300 of his mightiest men, his most valiant fighters, and he gathers them together and he goes towards David to try to kill him. There are 3,000 of them in verse 2. And then in verse 3, what happens is David's men are in this cave. And Saul goes into the same cave and basically to use the bathroom. That euphemism in the scriptures are good. They cover those things up. But basically he's going into the cave to use the bathroom. And while he's using the bathroom, he takes off his robe, sets it aside. And David comes in and by the encouragement of his men says, "Now's the time, David. Here's Saul at your disposal. He is occupied and you can go in there and you can slay him and you can become king." Well, David's a little bit leery of doing that, and so what does he do? He goes in there and he cuts off the hem of his garment, his robe, and he goes away. And he even feels guilty about doing that, which seems to indicate that he was probably going to it with a spirit of animosity rather than a spirit of encouragement towards his master. And then Saul gets up and leaves the cave, and David follows him afterwards and hollers out to him and says, "Saul, it's David." And then begins to explain to him that he had an opportunity to kill him, but he didn't. And instead, he only cut off the hem of his garment. And so in verse 4, it says he sneaks up, takes the portion of his robe. David, in verses 5 through 7, refuses to harm Saul. And then in chapter or verses 8 through 15, he reveals his lack of vengeance against Saul. And in verse 13, it says this proverb. It says, "As the proverb of the ancient says, wickedness proceeds from the wicked, but my hand shall not be against you." In other words, the idea is that the fruit of the Spirit or the fruit will indicate one's life. And so here the proverb indicates that David has the right heart towards his master. Verse 14 says, "And after whom has the king of Israel come out? Whom do you pursue? A dead dog? A flea?" This kind of reminds me of back in chapter 17 when David goes out against Goliath. Remember what Goliath said? "Did you come out to me as a dog with sticks?" Now David is humbling himself before Saul, basically saying that he is like that. And then verse 15, "Therefore let the Lord be judge and judge between you and me and see and plead my case and deliver me out of your hand." And then verses 16 through verse 21, Saul recognizes the character of David that was unwilling to take vengeance when he had the opportunity and recognizes that he will actually be a better ruler than Saul himself is and praises him for that, legitimizes his rule. And then in verse 22, David promises to be merciful to Saul's family line even when he becomes king. And then the situation temporarily changes soon after that, but it doesn't last very long. And by chapter 26, we see David having another opportunity to take vengeance upon his master and doesn't do so. And then finally in chapter 31 of 1 Samuel, Saul dies and David becomes king. So what can we learn about David's character in this regard, especially as it relates to Saul and Saul's leadership? Well, the first thing is this: give honor where honor is due. We see this principle over and over again in the scriptures. And notice in verse 6 what David says. He says, "And he said to his men, 'The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord.'" You see, David understood that Saul was still in the position of leadership in the land. He understood that Saul was still the authority, the king, the one who was to be submitted to and not to overthrow. And so even though Saul was seeking his life, even though Saul was persecuting him, even though Saul was making him flee, he was not going to rise up against his leader. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17 says this, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Daniel chapter 4, verse 17 speaks about the authorities that God has placed in positions, and that he actually appoints these positions and appoints the rulers for these positions. Daniel chapter 4, verse 17 says, "This decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men." Now, I find that pretty interesting. And that's a part where we can at least gain a little bit of insight. We wonder how in the world do some of the people get elected that do. Well, it says right there, he sets over it the lowest of men. So, there you go. Daniel chapter 2, verse 21 says he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. And then in Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 5, it says, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God." You see, David understood that. Even though Paul was writing 1,000 years after the time of David, the scriptures are consistent. And the principle is that we are to honor those where honor is due. And if someone has a position of authority over us, whether it be a president, whether it be a king, whether it be a governor, whether it be a councilman, whatever it might be, those positions have an authority with them that God has appointed to that position. And so we must honor them. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 17 says, "Therefore submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good." So God raises these up. He sends them out. Puts them into various places so that they might receive the honor. It follows then that if we dishonor them, or if we do not honor them, that by resisting them or dishonoring them, we are actually resisting the authority of God. Listen to what it says in Romans chapter 13. Again, it says, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves." In speaking about the increase of evil in the last days, Peter says this in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 10, that the people will be those who walk according to the flesh in the lusts of uncleanness and despise authority. They are presumptuous, self-willed. They're not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. Does that describe our generation? I think it does. You know, Paul showed honor. We've talked about that in our Sunday school classes. When he was before Felix and when he was before Festus and Agrippa and all of these various dignitaries, did Paul go at them saying, "You guys are just a bunch of lousy leaders"? Did he say that? No. What does he say? He goes before them and say, "Oh, King Agrippa, I know that you are most honorable, and I know that you are able to discern the ways of the Jewish people." What's he doing? He's giving honor to the king. He's fulfilling exactly what he says for us to do. Now, this is hard to do. I realize this. It's hard to do when our leaders, in many cases, consider enemies of liberty. When they pass laws allowing for abortion. When they pass laws that take or make our property, take our property away in taxation. Or when they debase the money through debt and through monetary stimulus. When they pass laws preventing the praying in public places. When they pass laws redefining marriage. It's hard for us to honor people that do that, isn't it? And yet when we look at the leaders like Saul, was Saul someone who's worthy of honor? Not really. Was Nero, who was the ruler when Paul wrote Romans chapter 13, was he worthy of honor? Not based on his character. And yet Paul honored him anyway. There's a difference between disagreeing and being a moral voice to bad government and showing dishonor. We can respect the office, but not agree with the policies of the person in the office. So how do we do this? Well, a couple of things. First of all, we honor by doing what they say, but not what they do. Matthew chapter 23, verses 1 through 3, Jesus, in speaking about the Pharisees, says this, He spoke to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, do." That observe and do, but do not do according to their works. For they say and do not do. And so we can honor those who are in high places. We can honor those who are in positions of authority by doing what they ask us to do, even if we don't necessarily agree with what they say. Then we also can honor them by not speaking ugly about them. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 10, again, talks about those who reject the authority in the last days, and they are presumptuous and self-willed. It says they're not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. My friends, we should be afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 20 says, "Do not curse the king, even in your thoughts." I'll just leave it at that. "Do not curse the rich, even in your bedroom, for a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter." How many times have you seen somebody, maybe in the public sphere, who has risen to the public sphere, and then they do a background check, and all these things come out about what they've said in the past? Right? Happens all the time. Well, that's just a fulfillment of that verse in Ecclesiastes. Titus chapter 3, verses 1 to 2. This one really got me. "Remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men." Does that describe your character? Or do we reflect cynicism? Bitterness, anger, accusation towards others. I think the instruction is clear. Speak evil of no man. You know, even David could have easily, when he was confronting Saul, said, "You know what, Saul? You're not a very good leader. I would make a much better leader. And, you know, you've been pursuing me, and you're acting way out of character, way out of the court." He didn't say any of that, did he? He humbled himself, bowed down to the ground, and called out to Saul. So the first thing is then, give honor where honor is due. Secondly, turn it over to God. Turn it over to God. Look with me in verses 12 through 15. This is what David says. "Let the Lord judge between you and me, and let the Lord avenge me on you. But my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancient says, wicked proceeds from the wicked. By my hand shall not be against you. After whom has the king of Israel come out? Whom do you pursue? A dead dog? A flea? Therefore let the Lord be judge, and judge between you and me, and see and plead my case, and deliver me out of your hand." What's David doing? He's saying, look, I'm not going to take it into my own hand. I'm going to let the Lord be the judge. I'm going to let the Lord take vengeance if there's vengeance that's due. I'm going to let the Lord repay. You see, that's what's all about faith. Deuteronomy 32, verse 35 says, "Vengeance is mine and recompense. Their foot shall slip in due time, for the day of their calamity is at hand, and the things to come hasten upon them." Hebrews chapter 10, verse 30 says, "For we know him who said, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord. And again, the Lord will judge his people." Romans chapter 12. And by the way, Romans chapter 12 comes right before Romans chapter 13, right? Romans chapter 13 is the whole passage dealing with honoring those who are in authority over us. Romans chapter 12, verse 17 through 21 says, "Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as it depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you keep coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Taking vengeance really is saying that we are going to do what God says He's going to do. We're taking things into our own hands. We're playing God when we say that we are going to take vengeance rather than allowing God to take vengeance. Matthew chapter 5, verse 38 through 42 says, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth." Now we could stop right there and say, well, that's it. Somebody hits me, I'm hitting them back. Someone does wrong to me, I'm doing wrong back to them. But listen to what Jesus says. "But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him your other also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, give him your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go one mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away." You see, the idea of revenge is rampant in our culture, isn't it? How many of y'all have heard of the Avenger comic book series? Anybody? I think X-Man's in there and some other ones. And the whole idea is that they're going to get revenge on the bad guys. And they, you know, collectively work together to do that. And then there's a television show. I have not seen it, but there's a television show called Revenge. It's an evening drama. And from what I understand, the main character tries to take vengeance on all those, especially the Grayson family in the Hamptons, who caused her father to go to prison. And so she, one by one, executes these people in the show. What a great show, right? One person taking vengeance upon the whole family. Who hasn't heard a child say at one time or another, "I'm going to get you for that"? It's taking vengeance. Have you ever said something like, "Well, I'll show you then"? Or, "They'll be sorry for doing that"? Well, those are the words of revenge. The problem with all this is that it's not our job to take vengeance. It's not our job to get revenge. God is the avenger. We can't take things into our own hands, especially paying people back for the wrong that they've done to us. Instead, we need to have faith in the providence of God. Faith that God is going to work out things according to His details and work out the situation so that ultimately justice is served. It takes a great deal of trust to do that, but that's what we're called to do. And then thirdly, we're supposed to love our enemies. We're supposed to love them that hate us. Verses 17 through 22. "Then he said to David, 'You are more righteous than I, for you have rewarded me with good.'" See what David's doing? Even though he was shown evil, what is he doing? He's showing good back in return. That's what love is. You see, it's really easy to love those who love us, isn't it? It's hard to love those who hate us. And yet that's what David's doing. Verse 18, "And you have shown this day how you have dealt with me. For when the Lord delivered me into your hand, you did not kill me. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safely?" You see, that's human nature. You come upon an enemy, what is your natural inclination to do to that enemy? Hurt him. Cause problems. But that's not what David did. And it's not what we're called to do either. So verse 20, "And now I know indeed that you shall surely be a king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established into your hand. Therefore swear now to me by the Lord that you will not cut off my descendants after me, and that you will not destroy my name from my father's house." So David swore. You see, David was willing to say, "Look, even though you have persecuted me, even though you have done everything you can to kill me," we didn't read about it, but at one point, Saul took a spear and tried to throw it right at David while he was in the same room with him. Now, if that doesn't cause you to want to get revenge, I don't know what would. And yet, what does David do? Instead, he blesses him. He says, "No, I'll make sure that your children are taken care of. I'll make sure that your line is not forgotten." That's love, isn't it? That's what David was able to do. Matthew chapter 5, verse 43 through 48 says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.'" Well, that's it, right? Jesus says, "But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rains on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. You see, it's only natural for us to want to love those who love us. The hard thing is loving those who don't love us, isn't it? You ever been around someone who's just really, really hard to get along with? It requires the grace of God to love, doesn't it? And yet that's what we're supposed to do. 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 7 says, "But the king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because of the Lord's oath that was between them, between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul." Now, we're not going to necessarily read that story, but you could look it up in 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 7. It's a great story of Mephibosheth coming in, fearing that he might lose his life because now Saul is gone and David is on the throne and Mephibosheth is the heir. And he comes in and he's feeble. And David spares his life, not only spares his life, but blesses him by allowing him to sit at his table and giving him wealth and land and prosperity. He loves him. Now, what did Jesus do when he was being betrayed and he's in the Garden of Gethsemane and the whole army comes out to attack him or to take him, and Peter stretches out his sword and cuts off Malchus's ear? What does Jesus do? He said, "Ha! You got what you deserved." Is that what he said? What does he do? Takes the ear, puts it back on, heals the guy. Here's a guy that's going to take him to the cross. And what does he do? Heals him. That's love. What did Jesus do when he was hanging on the cross being mocked by the people going by? They're waving their heads, mocking him, laughing at him. What does he do? Prays for them. Says, "Forgive them. They know not what they do." That's love. We can learn from Jesus' response to persecution what it means to love our enemies. Pray for your enemies and your persecutors. Who's that person? And you probably doesn't take long to bring it up in your mind. Who's that person that has hurt you the worst in your life? Pray for them. Secondly, want what is best for them. Sometimes we don't necessarily want to hurt somebody, but we don't want them to get very much either, do we? It's like, "Lord, okay, I'm not going to take vengeance on them. I'm not going to kill them. I'm not going to take them to court. I'm not going to do those things that I really want to do. But Lord, make their life miserable." No, instead what we should be doing, we should be praying, "God, bless them. Even though they persecuted me, even though they've hurt me, even though they've done wrong to me, bless them, Lord." That's what love is. Do good to them and theirs. Lavish upon them good. No, don't just withhold vengeance. Actually pour upon them blessing. You know what would be remarkable right now? You probably have this person in mind. Maybe there's somebody at work that just it's hard to get along with. Maybe there's someone in your family that's just been an aggravation. Maybe they've been trying to fight with you over an inheritance for the last 20 years or whatever it might be, okay? You can just figure out what it might be. Wouldn't it be great to just this week call that person up and say, "You know what? Tired of fighting? You can have it all." Huh? Can you imagine? This life's not all there is, right? How much better would it be if we could act that way? How is it possible to love someone who has wronged you? Well, in the flesh, it's not possible. Our flesh can love people who love us. But God doesn't call us to live by the flesh, does he? He calls us to live by the Spirit. Pray for God to fill you with his love. And what does his love look like? What does the scripture say? It says that when we were enemies of him, he loved us. When we were enemies of him, he died on the cross for us. That's the kind of love that we are to have towards our enemies. So let's consider those questions we began with. If you had a chance to get back with someone who has wronged you in the past, Would you do it? Or what if you get back with someone whom you are currently in a time of tension, to say the least? Would you do it? Or if you're with a group of people who are bad-mouthing the president, do you join in? Why is everybody smiling? It's hard, isn't it? And yeah, I think the scriptures are really clear. Give honor where honor is due. Trust God to bring vengeance. And love your enemies. Let's pray.
And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? Change your legacy. What will you do to change your legacy?